I just love what you do for me. You're so reliable, smart, and incredibly well-connected.
Excuse me, could I pay for my meal?
Oh, of course. Just having a moment with my CommBank smart terminal. Tap away.
Feel a stronger connection. With extra connectivity, you're always payment ready. There's more to love with the CommBank smart terminal.
It is a nice terminal.
Eligibility criteria, fees and T's and C's apply.
Hey, welcome to the MediCubes podcast, where we bring you all that's good, exciting and sometimes challenging in primary healthcare.
I'm Chris Spee, joined by my good friends Kim Poyner and Rivka Hagen. Together we bring a wealth of experience and passion, as well as being in the thick of what's going on in our industry.
We used to have a laugh, debrief and chat about all the big issues and what was happening in our own professional worlds, and invite you to join us in this conversation.
So join us and our invited guests every month to bring you a lighthearted take on the latest, greatest and controversial issues and a few pearls of wisdom along the way.
In the spirit of reconciliation, we acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we meet and pay our respects to the elders past, present and emerging. A hearty welcome from Birrarri country.
And Rivka Hagen here. I'm meeting you from Jajawurrung country.
And a big hello from Turrbal and Jagera country.
Welcome, everybody, to the MediCubes podcast. It's Kim Poyner here with you today, and welcome to 2024. My apologies for not being here last time that you all convened on our wonderful podcast regarding GP registrars, and I'm sure you had great delight listening to that just as much as I did. So today we are going to discuss communication pathways. We are looking at how do we effectively communicate new initiatives and changes, as well delve really deep into the tips and tricks of good communication, as well as where they can, you know, sometimes trip us up and sometimes we can have little hurdles around it and barriers around communication pathways. We are particularly going to hone in to our discussion about practice managers and communicating to GP teams, particularly in this episode today. And I am joined by my fabulous colleagues, Rivka Hagen and Chris Smead. So welcome to today's podcast.
Hi, Kim. It's lovely to have you as part of the full panel again for 2024.
We missed you last week, so it's so good to have you back. And I think it's a perfect episode to continue on with following our registrar chat last week, because communication really came through as one of the key things to ensure a successful placement, not just of registrars, but new GPs or existing GPs or practice managers or any team member joining or being part of the team.
Great. And I really want to start off putting my executive coach hat on for a start and talking about communication. We have many ways of communicating and we only communicate verbally 8% of the time. 38% is how we say something. So the pitch, the tone, the intonation, the pauses, the modulation. And 55% is our body language. So think about that when you are communicating with your GPs, how much of your communication is actually getting translated and perceived in the way that you intended, okay? So think about what you're writing. Maybe if it's a phone call discussion, if it's a text, you're getting under half of what you are trying to communicate across to that other person. So Chris, from your perspective, when have you seen communication go well?
Yeah, look, I found COVID, and I know we've brought up a few times on the show, but everything related to COVID really made us hone our communication skills. Suddenly things that we used to do over a couple of weeks or a couple of months or through some practice meetings, suddenly we had to react, within a few hours every night or every morning. And what I found really interesting and exciting in that is that we quickly learned that the way that each different team member or a few different team members had different ways that was best to communicate with. So I know I had some doctors that loved the text message. Some doctors, though, that wouldn't like a text message, but liked a forwarded email with the evidence behind what we were doing. I liked some team members just loved the communications scribbled down in the notebook, and other team members were happy to get to the practice a little bit earlier to have a meeting to sync up. So to me, there was lots of different ways that COVID showed how communication can work. What about you, Riff?
Yeah, look, I love what you're saying there. And I guess that's kind of where my brain was heading as well. that understanding that we all kind of get caught up in our own preferred ways of communicating, and we don't necessarily know or understand that that may not resonate so well across other people within our team. So I guess I certainly would have said that we need to be really clear about everybody's ways of communicating kind of right up front. And you want to make sure that, especially for new people coming onto the team, that we tap into that understanding simply by asking, are you a visual learner? Do you prefer the written word? Do you like receiving emails? Would you prefer a knock on the door? What's going to work best for you? And isn't that just a fabulous way of displaying our active listening and our thoughtful listening right from the get-go, so that we can kind of develop our systems in a way that speaks to everybody's needs in terms of their preferred communication style?
I love that, Riff. And that's the representational systems you're referring to there. And, you know, we all have dominant representational systems, and usually visual is the more dominant out of most of them, but not assuming that everyone likes to learn in the same way. But onboarding new team members, it's really important to let them know where you're going to be communicating with them. Is it going to be just email, or is there a communication book? Or, you know, is it something that you do in team meetings like huddles and the like? But knowing where to find information if you need it is really important, particularly if you've only got team members who might only work for you once a month or every now and then, or just coming back from leave, etc. They need to go find what's the latest information and why are we doing what we're doing, and what the latest recommendations federally, or it could be policy within our own internal structures. Riff, what about you?
Yeah, look, I guess what I'm thinking about here as well is that we know that everybody's got their preferred ways of receiving information and understanding it, but don't we hit upon it so often that as managers, we think, oh my goodness, I've already told you this, or I've already shown you that. Why has that not hit home? And the knowledge and the understanding that we probably do need to repeat ourselves, and maybe in different modalities, in order for our message to be truly heard and understood. And I know it can be very frustrating when you think you've already articulated what you want to say or what you want to get across really well, and it hasn't quite landed. So thinking about repeating what you've already said and being okay with that, right? That having to repeat something is not a failure. It's just that the way that, you know, people are able to absorb that information, and perhaps looking at cross-referencing that in a couple of different ways, having a visual way, having a written way, having an auditory way, and putting some life around that. What about you, Chris?
I think that's so true, Riv. And one of the things that also occurred to me was that sometimes as PMs, or maybe if you're a GP only listening to this podcast, you live and breathe everything in the practice, maybe more than other people in your team. So you'll go home and you're still thinking about everything overnight, or you'll get in half an hour early and you've been thinking about something for half an hour before the rest of your team gets in. And sometimes I know that I had to learn that if I'd hit F8 and sent a message out to the whole team about a change or what was happening, I couldn't presume that the first thing everyone did every morning was get in and read their messages. You know, there's lots of other competing demands for their time. Maybe they're running late and they've just jumped straight into seeing their first patient. That sometimes us communicating with our team, them receiving the communication wasn't the priority. They had 10 other priorities. So just to learn to maybe check in before jumping into a topic was probably one of the biggest things that I knew that I had to improve in myself, because my head would run away and I'd already sort of solved that problem and moved on to the next problem and was thinking about the next thing and what are we going to do here? And it just meant that the communication never started from a level that we were engaging, because they were playing catch up or I was frustrated, and it was never a good spot to begin with. Kim, you got a point on that one?
Yeah, I really love what you just said, because being in a clinical role where some people might actually arrive right on time because of other competing interests, you know, social competing interests for them. And then, you know, obviously they didn't have a chance to read maybe emails or F8 messages, as you made, you know, in relation to their software system and their messages. One of the really beautiful things that I really appreciated about one of our previous CEOs, she used to actually walk around the practice and she used to physically say good morning to everybody as a team and just check in if there was anything. So similar to a huddle, but less much getting everyone together in one space. She would actually just, if there was anything really pertinent or we really need to know right now, she would make sure that face-to-face she delivered that message. So similar to what you're saying, Ruth, like, you know, just double checking that people receive that information. And, you know, she might have had to explain things multiple times to multiple different people in multiple different ways, but she physically was face-to-face, which meant that she could see whether people were understanding or maybe there was a bit of confusion or maybe there were some further questions and clarification required. Chris, you've got some further things to add there.
Yeah, look, it actually reminded me of a fantastic learning I had, a piece of advice, Dr. Sue, one of the clinical directors that I had in our practice. I was all across something. I needed to communicate something to Sue. But then Sue said, Chris, I'm in the middle of a session seeing patients. So from 8 to 11, my headspace is 100% on who's just come in, who's coming in next, what I need to do, how I care for these patients. And if you want to have a great dialogue, and this is sounding a bit cold, but if you want to engage and have a good dialogue and understand something and share something, that's not the time to do it in between patients. And I know it's urgent and important to you, but to me, I'm focused on that and my headspace is there. And I think I got that maybe in like the second week of being a practice manager. And I have to tell you, it was one of the best bits of advice I've ever got, was to actually think about the person who I need to talk to, what headspace are they in now? You know, Dr. Jane's been running 45 minutes late all day. It's not going to be a great time to talk to them at lunchtime about a change. Simple things like that.
And for me, I actually love that really direct instruction to say, I understand you've got something important to say to me, but I'm not able to fully listen and absorb what you've got to say right now. To me, it's kind of the hallmark of ultimate respect, isn't it? To say, I absolutely want to hear what you've got to say, but now's not a good time for me. Can we do this a little bit later or at an agreed time? What a beautiful way to communicate.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, having some structured time around when it is going to be good to have lots of different like meetings, finding out from your staff when is going to be a great time to even connect and do things such as quality improvement initiatives, maybe having subcommittees and the like to look at, you know, different ways that we could improve processes, even hearing grievances, like what's the way to receive really positive feedback, right? If it's been, you know, obviously someone feels quite passionate about something and they've brought it to you, how do you receive it and then respond to it, I think is really important. So having those really clear communication pathways mapped out and everyone's clear about who do I go and see and when's the best time and what's the best medium, I think is really critical from right from induction, isn't it? And then repeating that throughout the many iterations of maybe quarterly meetings and so forth.
And so, of course, for all of that sort of communication structure and scaffolding to work really well, we need to have developed a pretty good base of trust, don't we, underneath all of that? Because if we're feeling safe and secure and sort of have that psychological safety aspect to it, then we know that those communication pathways will overlay very nicely with that and we're good to go with that. On the converse, if we're not feeling too certain about everybody's role and who's who in the zoo and who can I trust and am I okay with what you're going to say or put forward, then even those communication strategies could become far more fraught or loaded. So I think that's an important consideration to bring into the conversation as well.
Ruth, I'd really love for you to really explain psychological safety because I know that we get it, but I'm just curious to know there might be other people that may never have heard that term before, what that actually means when you refer to psychological safety.
Yeah, well, look, the psychological safety is really the sense that we feel trusted, that our team's got our back or our manager's got our back, that we are not out to weaponize our discussions, that even though we may disagree, that we care for each other and we are concerned for each other with an element of goodwill and positivity that sits behind that. So it is about feeling safe in the conversations and the conduct around us. And so that's really built up over a longer period of time based on the experiences that we've had within this organization. So I guess if we come into a new organization and we come with positivity and, you know, we want to do really, really well, of course, new employees are going to feel a bit anxious because everybody does when they're coming into a new space. If there is a sense of welcoming and trust and an openness that issues can be brought to the table, your questions are very welcome, are not going to be ridiculed. We leave aggression outside the door, that has no place within our workplace. Then we start to get a sense of, okay, I can work with this and let me learn as we go along and we're going to track along okay. On the converse, if we come into a workplace and we feel that we are being watched and, you know, our performance is being judged negatively sort of right from the get-go and we're feeling nervous about people's interaction with us and it starts to, raise some walls around us and we're going, I'm just not quite sure what's going on here. That's really that development of unpsychologically safe workplaces where we are going to hold back with what we're really thinking. We're not necessarily going to say what we're thinking because we're not quite sure how these things are going to land. So they're just a couple of examples of what a psychologically safe environment looks like versus the opposite.
Yeah, fantastic. And Chris, I'd love to hear your insights into, you know, providing a psychological safe environment where you know that potentially everyone's input is encouraged and welcomed and also anyone's feedback is encouraged and welcome.
Yeah, look, I think it always starts with the leaders in the practice exhibiting this behaviour. That you are exhibiting as a leader in your practice, if you're the owner or the principal GP or the practice manager, the environment that you create will trickle down. And it'll trickle down, but it'll also be there for day one. And I'm lucky enough to work with a lot of fantastic new owners who may sometimes be focused on just getting the practice open or just getting to this or just getting to that, which is amazing to get the doors open and to get a team there. But a huge part of that is actually creating that culture from day one that has that safety and that environment, because it's going to pay off in the long run. You're going to attract amazing people. You're going to make an amazing place to be. But to me, it all starts at the top. And I think where I see it fall apart a lot of the time, maybe where people are trying to manage that upwardly. And that's really hard to manage that and exhausting on people. And you'll lose good people if that's the space you've created. And I think we could all think of a workplace where someone was trying to manage that up or someone was trying to cover up for the leader who maybe didn't have that approach. And they're the workplaces that I would never go back to or ever want to go back to and don't think of fondly.
Yeah, and I commonly see when there's a high turnover staff, there's always that question mark in my mind about maybe has communication fallen over. I'd love to just walk into, first and foremost, what sort of technologies could be useful in a practice to ensure that even remote teams might be receiving the information in real time and keeping people really well informed? Chris, I'm curious to know from your perspectives what you've seen work well.
Yeah. Look, I think another benefit of COVID has been just the rapid advance in this space to the tool sets that are available. I'm thinking the main ones are sort of Slack and Teams. I always caution people, though, that when they move to those async communication methods, you need to make sure that whatever method you use, you set some clear rules. Is patient data going to be allowed in this communication method? So as a team, and we have a problem, maybe we have a difficult patient, are we going to use this communication method to talk about that problem? Or should this all be going back to the chat? Or all be going back to an in-person meeting? Because some of those communication platforms, like particularly Slack, don't guarantee that the data stays in Australia. So we can't be 100% sure that we're complying with the privacy principles on that front. On the flip side, though, a good friend of the podcast, George, always says the best way to cover yourself legally on this front is to buy everyone a license for whatever platform you're using, whether it's Teams or Outlook or Slack, and to insert the message there so you can see who's read it and shared it with everyone. And for the $7 or $8 a month to have that facility, yeah, can totally be worth it to help with the frustration there. So I think it's like what we do with a lot of technology, is looking at it, making sure we're choosing the right technology and then going with it. I know there are a lot of free messaging applications out there that might sound good to save the $7 or $8 per user per month, But free doesn't necessarily mean privacy compliant and safe, and also might not be up when you need it. So that's sort of the first one. The second one is always come back to, if it is a patient record or a note about the patient and you are subpoenaed, it needs to be in the patient record. Otherwise, the subpoena is going to start dropping everywhere. Hey, suddenly it's looking at everything. So using the patient notes when something involves a patient, really, really important. And finally, just be aware of the cost of some technologies and also like the barrier to adoption. So for us, we might say, great, we've got the latest iPhone, we're going to use the latest version of Teams, and we're going to do this way of communicating. That might not work for our whole team. We might not all be on iPhones. We might not all have the latest iPhones. We might not embrace iPhones. That's not a piece of technology we use. We might not be fully across that. And that becomes a real cultural blocker to take up of these great tools. So I think it's, I'm sorry I can't give you a recommendation, but it's got to be something, and you know your team better than others. So I know some fantastic practices that are very modern, brand new practices, and they all love it. And they have mobile phones, and they've done this and this and this, and that's the way they've done it. I'm certainly an old man now, they're mobile phones, you know, but they've sort of embraced that as the way of working. But then other practices, for them, the best form of communication is the book that sits at the front desk. So I know I run a tech company, it should be tech forward, but never feel afraid that just because it's technology doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a better way to communicate with everyone. Riv, I think you had a good point to make.
Yeah. Look, I guess my thoughts around all of this is I liked what you said, Chris, about just the caution on, you know, using anything that's related to patients in technology outside of the patient health record. And I would absolutely say that all patient-related communication ought to live within the scaffolding of your practice management software, you know, your best practice, your medical director or whatever software you are using for client and patient management. That's where those conversations belong, and there are communications channels available there, and really leave all of the additional and outside of patient-related communication to be using the more modern technologies that are going to be suitable to practice. But what I would say too, in terms of all of the banter and the chit-chat that happens within teams outside of patient-related conversations, is that that speaks so loudly too of the tone and the culture within the practice. And so the communication styles that are used within those platforms will say a lot about the formality of the organization and, you know, how friendly all of that kind of plays out. And I love the idea that, you know, those communication channels have a little bit of lightheartedness about them too. Of course, there are robust stuff that needs to be said. If it's around policy, procedure, the way we do things around here, that's, you know, that's pretty serious stuff. But it can't all be that, right? We need to also have a channel for some jokes and a little bit of a laugh and just making sure that we bring a little bit of lightness to our conversations there.
Yeah, and I like that you just mentioned segregating out the conversations, what's important, so people aren't just getting a stream of information and it could be a joke and it could be someone's going to be sick tomorrow, someone's, you know, got to take their car to get it fixed on their way to work, you know, and then you have to go on and look right through all that information to find the gritty stuff. So as you say, segregate it out so we can have some banter, we can have some lighthearted fun, but we also need to have rules around, you know, no late night kind of conversations happening when people are out of work hours unless it's urgent. And then if it is urgent, is that the right medium to use to let the practice manager know really important information? I think that's kind of the policies and procedures that need to be in that kind of depth, don't they? Like, what are we allowed to use this medium for? And then what's really out of scope here, Riff?
Yeah, I agree that we need to become a little bit more formal about setting the framework around how those communication strategies actually play out. So having a policy and a procedure around how we do this is really important. And then, of course, ensuring that our staff are all inducted into the rules of how we do things around here when it comes to communication.
And then I think also, and I'm going to, you know, put my hand up and confess this, leading by example. So my team gave me feedback that when I have a day off and then I still respond on Teams to a message, why am I having a day off? And it just makes them be like, well, you're having a day off, have your day off, enjoy your day off, because when we have a day off, we want to enjoy our day off. And if you're working on your day off, it's a bad look. You know, it's not respecting how we do it. So then as leaders, we need to make sure that the rules and the way we do things and the culture we set up around it also respects that. So I know one of the favorite features I've got in Teams or Slack or whatever you might be using is the delayed send. So if I have a thought at 6 o'clock about something for tomorrow, I'll type it up in Teams and I'll press the delayed send so it gets sent to my team member tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, because they're not interrupting their out of work time. And I know it might sound simple, a little message, they can just ignore it. But I know for me, if I get a message on Teams, I look at it straight away on my phone and I answer it, and it drags you back into that. So I think once again, it comes back to that leadership that we have to exhibit the way of working that we want our team to exhibit for them to really get on board and follow.
I think what we're talking about here, Chris, is digital hygiene, isn't it? That, you know, we've got the blurring happening of what's work-related and we are now in our home time and how do we respond to all of this? And, of course, some new laws have just come into effect around the ability for staff to actually clock off and not become available in that after-hours space. But I agree that, you know, the way that we apply that with some diligence has a really big carry through too. So I think that's a message certainly for practice owners and for practice managers as well, to just be very careful about what you're communicating and what hour of the day and what day of the week we are actually doing this, because it does set the tone for what is expected within this workplace. So, Chris, what are your thoughts around digital hygiene, and have you got any final thoughts on this most interesting discussion?
Oh, look, I think digital hygiene is definitely an evolving space as new technologies keep changing. But it actually brings me back to another great point that I'd like to sort of wrap up and think on, is that the communication pathways in your practice, the communication style in your practice will change as your practice changes. When you're a practice of three people, you're probably all around the tea room at morning tea and can have a chat. When you grow to six people and you have some part-time team members, it'll change once again. When you go to 10 team members, it'll change once again. But then you might go back to six people and it'll change once again. So I think, you know, one of the things that I've learned over the years is that none of this can be, you know, set in stone and this is the way we do it. It's always got to be recalibrated and thought about and feedback gathered to saying, are we communicating well as a team? What about you, Kim?
Yeah, I'm right on the same sort of line of thought as you are. And I think it's about actively seeking feedback. Is this working for us or is this working against us? What's been the positive aspects we've seen out of our current communication style? What other ways might we communicate that would enhance our communication? And constantly bringing that up, because it's so vital. The McKinsey report has demonstrated time and time again that, you know, really effective communication between team members, particularly in healthcare, is a hospital avoidance strategy. And we know that that means that the culture of the workplace is so much better enhanced and people will thrive in that space. What about you, Riff? What's your parting thought here?
So my final thoughts are that communication is absolutely at the heart of how our practice operates and the success that it delivers in achieving its goals and providing care to the community as well. It sits across every domain of our practice, and it is the hallmark that either tells us that we are doing really, really well or that there is a whole lot more work to be done. So I've really appreciated this conversation, and I'm sure our listeners will get some ideas out of the discussion that we've just had today.
Thanks for listening to the Medicubes podcast. Make sure you subscribe via your favourite podcast listening app so you don't miss an episode. Medicubes is brought to you by Cubico, MediCoach and Medical Business Services, with technical support from the awesome crew at Talking Health Tech. This podcast presents information of a general nature, and we recommend that you obtain professional advice for your individual circumstances always. We'd love to hear your feedback, questions, and suggestions for future topics on the show. Make sure you visit us via the Medicubes website, which you can access via the show notes of this episode. Also, if you're enjoying the show, write us a nice review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and share it with someone who might get some value from it, so we can continue to share these important messages with more people. Speak to you next time.